You're listening to Four Seas, One Family, episode 70. Welcome to Four Seas, One Family, the podcast where expats and future expats can share and learn about life experiences abroad. I'm your host, James Thomas, coming to you from Taipei, Taiwan, and I'm so glad to have you traveling along with me on this journey, and welcome to the show. We are quickly coming up on the holiday seasons, and no matter where you are, I hope you are enjoying your holiday time and carrying the holiday spirit. And if you are a foreigner living overseas, I hope you have the opportunity to share your cultures with the people in your host country. And also, if they are celebrating this holiday season too, that you, well, you know, take an effort to understand how they celebrate this holiday season. Holiday seasons is a good time where foreigners get together and just sit around and chat. And recently, I've had the opportunity to sit around and talk to some of my expat friends here in Taiwan to talk a little bit about how they feel living in their country, in their, I should say, host country, and how they see themselves there, or even other expats. And I've come across some interesting things and some terms used on how some expat friends of mine describe themselves and how they describe other expats. And in this episode, I want to talk a little bit about how things like privileges and how it relates to, say, the expat or immigrant status. I'm going to I wanted to get this off my chest for a long time. And it's going to be, well, just me talking, but I hope I'm able to express myself in a way that that people can understand it. And if you have any questions, please contact me here at comments at 4seas1family.com. Well, to begin with, I have been living outside my passport nation for some time now. And the terms that are or were used to describe my status in my host country and other nations I've traveled to over the years have caused me to think about the reasons I've been welcome or perceived differently in these nations. And also, while talking to some people about their overseas life, I've come across terms to define or describe them to be tied directly to the job or service they performed or are currently performing in their host country. So I wanted to find out how they felt about the terms used to describe them. But however, while doing so, I quickly discovered that there were facts that had to be honestly laid out in the open, even though some facts conflicted directly with some people's perceptions and or beliefs, right? Now, this is why I want to take a peek and search for what might be the underlining reasons why this is so. Now, I'm going to begin off in this way. You know, like the word supremacy, for example, the word supremacy has taken on a damaging connotation in the minds of people all over the world. And because in some ways it relates to wealth, race, and politics. Okay. Now, modern day supremacy has asserted the meaning that certain people or groups have the right to possess powers or privileges simply because of their economic status, political affiliation, race, or religion. Now, I know the word supremacy as well as the word privilege, as they relate to expats living overseas, have become lexicons that carry a lot of baggage with them that needs to be carefully unpacked and investigated. And the truth is that these terms assign an unbalanced status to those who are addressed by them. And in some places, this usually implies that the foreigner in question is of a special or different breed of human. It appears that those foreigners who are classified in different ways are entitled to be given or denied privileges or treatment because of his or her perceived uniqueness or lack of whatever uniqueness. So, but it is an undeniable fact that foreigners from certain preferred nations are given carte blanche in many situations. So let me try to break this down, what I mean by carte blanche. I'm broadly using the term preferred nations to describe countries that are seen as financially, technologically, militarily advanced or powerful, okay? Countries that are smaller or less financially or military powerful, for example, may look up to those powerful nations as protectors or even models to base themselves on. And honestly, it's not unusual for powerful and influential nations to attract this kind or this type of attention from smaller, weaker nations and even the people of these nations. Now, I want to talk a little bit about what I mentioned in the opening of this episode. I want to talk a little bit about, say, the expatriate or expat versus immigrant status. Now, a term that is commonly used to describe foreigners who are living, say, long term in a nation is called expat, expatriate, or expat for short. One simple generic definition used to describe an expat would be something like it would refer to any person, regardless of skin color, religion, or politics, who is residing temporarily or long term outside his or her passport nation. Now, all this sounds cool, simple, and to the point, right? But however, keep in mind that the word expat originally referred to a person who was expelled from his or her home nation. So you see, this word is over time taking on another connotation, a little twist to it. Now, there's that other word that is related, okay? And that term is called immigrant, which is the simplest of them all, I think, to describe foreigners, because it refers to someone who is permanently living legally in a nation that he or she isn't a native of, okay? In my host country, Taiwan, right? In my host nation, Taiwan, where I'm living, most people would classify me as an expat, but in reality, I may not really be one. Now, let's take a moment to again define the meaning of some terms, okay? Now, the word immigrant, I-M-M-I-G-R-A-N-T, refers to someone who has arrived from overseas to live in another nation, okay? Now, I'm just talking about somebody who's coming in, right? Another word that is used to describe a foreigner is called emigrant. And that's E-M-I-G-R-A-N-T. And that refers to someone who has left his or her passport nation to live abroad. Okay? Those are two simple. Immigrant and emigrant. E-M-I-G-R-A-N-T. Now, the root word is migrant. Okay? M-I-G-R-A-N-T. And that refers to someone who has moved from one place or one country to another just to find work. Wow. Okay. I'm breaking it down as much as I can. So once again, the simplest distinction is that an expatriate is someone who resides temporarily or long-term outside his or her passport nation. So an expat at some point plans to return to his or her passport nation, and an immigrant is someone who plans to permanently live in a nation that he or she isn't a native of. So far we all got it. But is it the way foreigners are really defined? There are a few related words that we can focus on, right? We already know about expatriate or expat for short, immigrant, and migrant. But for the purpose of this discussion today, let's focus on the words expatriate, expat, and immigrant, because they are the two that states or defines a foreigner status in most host countries. Yeah, these are the two terms that defines a foreigner's status in the host country the most. And that's the truth. Now that these terms have been somewhat defined, how should foreigners be classified in a host country? Simple question. Now, we need to ask, what is the criteria that should be used to define the status of foreigners? Okay, now that question could carry different tones of thoughts in different locations, right? But as a foreigner who just happens to be a person of color, when I travel to different nations, I find myself falling in and out of the range or borderlines of preferential treatment. And I think this is because the terms expat and immigrant don't collectively apply to all foreigners from all nations at all times. So we now have two words that are related, but today have very different connotations. Now, when we look into a crowd, right, and we see people who aren't passport holders of the nation they are residing in, should we address them all as expats, immigrants, or collectively something else? Human, right? But let's take a moment to look at this from a broad historical angle, because from this point of view, it becomes quite or very apparent how cultural supremacy plays a role in how foreigners from certain nations are addressed and treated. Europeans use their military might to set their sights on forcefully and selectively colonizing the world. Most of it was all about trade and a way of advancing their financial institutions, but they most likely purposely disregarded the livelihoods of the original inhabitants of the lands they were themselves hoping to possess. Europeans used a mixture of hard and soft methods to gain footholds in the lands and over the people they were hoping to control. Hard invasion tactics, right, relied very heavily on military weaponry, and soft invasion tactics relied on making the people of the conquered nations economically and spiritually reliant, okay? Reliant on the Europeans themselves for whatever goods and services they were hoped to promote in these conquered nations. Now, soft invasion tactics used a mixture of social controls and educational techniques to build reliance, okay? And it's quite openly and easily looked up. You can open up most history books today and dig into those points. But I want to make it clear that I want to be sensitive. The next point that I want to talk about can be quite hard for some people who are members of certain faiths or religions to hear. It may be a little bit hard for them to open their eyes to this point, I think. But along with the tactics I just mentioned, you know, hard and soft tactics, religious doctrines were used to accelerate submission to these colonizers, European colonizers' collective cause for the minds and hearts of the indigenous populations. And it is easy to see that it's very easy to see how religious doctrine formatted in Europe were used to forcefully demote local beliefs in many nations in Africa and Asia. But however, on the other hand, it cannot be denied that many indigenous populations benefited in some ways from the advanced healthcare and technical skills brought to them from European nations. And that is a fact. Now, in relatively a short time, the indigenous population interpreted the powers of their European colonizers as being the principal means of even uplifting themselves. Most of the original people of these nations made a conscious decision to adapt to their colonizers' lifestyles, laws, and religion to not only lessen their personal burdens, but also to create opportunities and improve the lives of their children, which in turn helped them build a hopefully a better future for their children. And another point to talk about here is as European financial institutions expanded their influence over the core of colonized nations, the indigenous populations began to view their colonizers as symbols of wealth and technological advancements. That's like what I mentioned before. Now, very quickly, and as a result of social programming, people from European nations gained privileges over the indigenous populations, right? Now, this quickly developed and turned into outright arrogance. Europeans' perceptions of being superior and privileged later turned into openly displayed hatred of people who weren't like them, you know, as observed in a number of genocides that took place in not only colonized nations, but even in Europe itself. Now, we can bring that up to what happened in, up to present times in Kosovo and stuff like that. But over time, nations that were once colonized by Europeans began to fight back and to some degree later gained their independence, but continued their relationships with their former colonizers. And, well, partly because European financial institutions maintained a foothold in their former colonies, the mindset of being superior was still maintained in the minds of many Europeans, and even in the subconscious minds of people of their former colonies. Now, wrap it up a little bit. This brings me back to the point that words or terms used to describe foreigners really do have underlining connotations. You know, there's an undeniable fact that the term expat in most nations has been reserved for white people, mostly from Western nations or preferred nations, because the term immigrant is reserved for people mostly of darker complexion who may originally be from less advanced or influential nations. Foreigners classified as immigrants in many nations are placed on a lower social ladder and aren't offered or have limited access to many local social services that are readily available to foreigners who are classified as expats. And this is true. However, it's also a fact that cultural superiority also plays a negative role in classifying people from other nations. It is obvious that these interpretations are laced with racism and classism, right? Classifying foreigners mainly on their ethnicity or cultural background just passes on the baton of racism. And if we are to build better cross-cultural relationships, this must be avoided, just simply stopped. Now, also because I've personally observed that most foreigners I've come across who refer to themselves distinctly as expats don't have the drive or maybe the need to objectively understand the culture they are living in. I should say the overseas culture they are living in. Now, this could be because some foreigners have developed opinions about their host country that make it appear that their host country isn't up to their personal standards or the standards of their home nation. And the way that some of these foreigners from especially these preferred nations speak about their home culture Or so it sounds very much like cultural narcissism. Yeah, cultural narcissism. Well, but another reason may be the simple fact that many foreigners I know, especially from those so-called preferred nations, are constantly moving around to other nations because of their maybe their job or business, which may cause them to feel that they have no reason to learn much about the nation they are temporarily living in. And that's quite sad, I would say. But to really wrap all this up, what is the end result of all this observation? Okay. Now, I personally think that anyone that has or has decided to live overseas for any reason must take the time to consciously understand their overseas status without adhering to thoughts that they are superior, privileged, or inferior in any way. I also think that national governments need to pay more attention to how they describe and or classify foreigners, because the way they interpret a foreigner's status also has an influence in how their local population view and welcome foreigners. Understanding the origins of words used to describe foreigners, it can be a very sensitive thing. It's very important. Now, I would say that many foreigners are, in fact, lucky in some ways, but surely not superior or inferior, because the fact is we are all members of one race, and that is the human race. I'd like to thank everybody today, and thank you for giving me the time out of your day to share my thoughts with you concerning the topic of privilege as it relates to the status of expats and immigrants. If you had found any of the information presented in this episode interesting or useful, please share it with your family, friends, or coworkers, okay? And please help us out by leaving us an honest review on Apple's podcast so that we can spread the word that the people of the world have more in common than they think. And thank you for joining me here at Four Seas, One Family. And if you would like to contact me, email me at comments@4seasonefamily.com, or you can send me a voicemail via SpeakPipe at 4seasonefamily.com/contact. Thank you very much, and enjoy your holiday seasons. 再见.